This is the Straight Dope Podcast. We are in Paper versus Steel Week, and I'm sitting here looking for my notes, and I can't seem to find them, so we're going to do what I often do, and that is pull out a piece of paper and scribble while I talk. If you listen to the first one, it was short. I mentioned that there are three more dates at Cameo. We've got classes in July, August, September. If you want to be a part of those classes, they're 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Go to Sniper's Hide, find the dates, sign up. It's awesome. Mile High Shooting supports the podcast, and I would like to extend the invitation to you to go there and say that the Straight Dope sent you. They've got tons of stuff and often give listeners a discount, so email them. But either way, they ship all over the country, and they're a cool shop. Sniper's Hide. Tons of articles, tons of videos, and Riflecraft. There's going to be a school section on the Riflecraft TV. And that is closing in on being launched. So go over there, check it out. And often the topics that I talk about here, I can write more of a biased or more of a this versus that type article with videos. And those are starting to pop up on a more regular basis. So check it out. There will be a steel versus paper article with a video there to compare and contrast, but not necessarily the way I'm doing it here, because here I'm entertaining myself by separating topics into individual topics and talking about those in isolation. So, lastly, if you want to support the podcast directly and you're a listener and you like this and you want to encourage that it continues, please go to riflecraft.com and get a supporter level subscription. That is the best way to directly support the podcast. You want to support it in other ways? Share it with your friends, share it on social media, and reach out to me, chris@riflecraft.com, Gun Around the Sun on Instagram, and Chris Way on Facebook. Send me messages, let me know what you think, and keep in touch. I like hearing from listeners. I hear from you almost every day, and it is darn cool to chat with folks. And most of you that have reached out realize that I will message and chat and often give you my cell phone number so we can text and chat, because sometimes I'm in the car doing random stuff, and that makes it easy to chat. Let's talk about paper. Paper is an old tried and true method of training. It makes it easy because it's much easier to find a 25, 50, 100-yard range to shoot paper than it is to find a range that has long-range steel set up. Some people have access to it. That's awesome. I'm speaking to the masses. In general, it's easier for a random person with a rifle to find an indoor paper range, outdoor paper range, and train. And so I think that's a huge advantage for paper. And I would argue that somebody could train on paper at 100 yards and get to an elite level without ever really shooting long range. Now, obviously, there's going to be some caveats to that, because there are things that you absolutely need with distance. You absolutely have to have the experience. But you could understand what you're going to do at distance, and assuming that you get some of that stuff worked out, which most of it is mental, you could perform at a great level. So let's think about and talk about why I think paper is so important for everybody that shoots. Talk about how I think paper is best used. And so let's break that down into a little bits. First of all, the access. You can go more often. So everybody's got a different schedule. Everybody's got a different work-life balance. But I would guess if you have access to a paper range, it's easier for you to get to that than steel. And because it's easier, you can likely go more often. I don't know whether you can go once a week, once every other week, twice a week, three times a week, five times a week. That's kind of individual. But the frequency at which you can go measure yourself on paper can be higher. And so because of that, it's also an advantage. Another advantage is that it removes most environmental effects. It removes a lot of ballistic things that you start to see at distance. And so it allows you to focus on a specific subset of the things that allow us to hit targets, namely fundamentals, right? Mechanics. It allows us to check our zeros. It allows us to check our equipment without having to account for a lot of things that start to show up when you go out to distance. Why is it so important in my mind that people train on paper? Because you can map out your fundamentals. And your fundamentals at your zero range, like 100 yards for center fire, and then whatever your fundamental range is at rim fire, and it might be past your zero range for rim fire just because they're so damn accurate, you can assess a lot of things that you're doing that I call inputs and outputs, and you can actually map that out. And we do that on Rifle Craft. We do that with the craft drill, and the detailed video and articles that are coming out about what that craft drill actually is and does might be really insightful for you. But we can actually map out, and if somebody sends me a target, and let's say we've isolated a position, and they send me a target that has five or six shots on it, usually I can tell what they're doing to the rifle to get the patterns that they're doing. And if I can't know exactly what it is, I can usually boil it down to two things, sometimes three, but it's usually one or two things. They could check very easily and then correct it. If you can do that for any point of impact shift and bring your point of impact to a uniform group size that matches your expectation for performance, matches across positions, that will help in anything that you do. And you can only do that at paper at 100 because you can't control a lot of things as you start to go out to distance. Because you can isolate and control fundamental point of impact shifts that the shooter's inducing on the system, you can train yourself to not input the things that cause the outputs that you're not looking for. You can test, measure, and assess ammo. You can test, measure, and assess a barrel. You can do all sorts of things in a way that allow you to isolate them to a level that can then give you information you could apply at a distance. But you can't really take that information from distance and know with certainty that that's actually what's happening, because you've got these circles of things that influence the shot patterns as you go out to distance. Those circles are fewer at 100 yards. So do I think somebody should go and just shoot 100 rounds like they might at steel on paper? Heck no. I usually tell people to shoot as few rounds as possible to identify a point of impact shift, identify a fundamental flaw, fix it. If that takes five shots to identify a flaw, once you've identified it, go after it. Video yourself, think about it, troubleshoot, look at the axis that the shift is on, look at the things that might be influencing it, tinker with it till you can remove it, and then start doing more shooting. And as you see the shot numbers increase and the flaws decrease, now you're talking about hit percentage reliability and performance reliability at your zero, right? I'm not saying that you're going to hit a target at distance. I'm saying that fundamentally, you're doing what's right. If you miss a target at distance, we've isolated away the fundamental parts. Now we know that it's not the fundamentals, not the rifle. It could be your ammo. It could be the wind. It could be the range. It could be other things, but it's not your fundamentals. When somebody goes, oh man, I got wind fucked, the first thing I think is, man, I wish I could see their 100-yard paper groups from this position. Because that would be the only thing that I would use to determine whether they actually got wind fucked, right? If their fundamentals were good compared to the target that they were shooting at, then I would start to ask questions about what was their wind plan? What was their wind hold? How were they holding? Did they use brackets? Were they pointing at aim? Were they, you know, what was going on? But I wouldn't immediately turn to, oh man, I got screwed by the wind, because you really don't know why somebody misses at distance until you isolate things that start at the shooter and creep their way out. So paper allows you to do that. It is cheap, right? You don't have to drive as much. You can print out a sheet of paper, take a picture of it. You can log it on the Riflecraft site. You could shoot stickers. I've got tons of Riflecraft target stickers with different drills and assessments. You can do drills. You can do all sorts of things, but I think of paper as a diagnostic tool. I don't want to really train positions. I don't want to train stages. I don't want to train high round counts. I want to use it as a diagnostic. But if you do regular diagnostic checkups, then you know that you're not somehow slipping in those errors. And I think paper is perfect for that. Why do I think that you shouldn't be training dot drills and speed things and doing things like crazy and high round counts when you shoot paper? Because I just don't think it carries over well. I think they're kind of silly gimmicks that end up having you training for that test rather than training for adaptability to the extended world. Now, this might sound like a huge shock to you guys, knowing that I have the craft drill and knowing that a lot of people shoot regular craft drills. And I tell everybody that asks me, I wouldn't do a craft drill every time you go shooting. If you want to, great, right? It's 12 shots. It's not that many. I wouldn't do it over and over again. And it's not training you for the, you know, the only thing that doing high round counts is doing is training for the craft drill. Now, at the IPRF competition in France 2 years ago, right, because it's coming up to Cameo in the United States this year, they had This Is the Way was a stage, and they did the craft drill as a stage. Now, people that trained the craft drill, obviously, that would get you ready for that. But you're never going to always shoot from that height of standing, that height of kneeling, that height of, you know, low kneeling or seated, and that height of prone. That's just not realistic. So you want to train adaptability, and it starts with knowing whether you have height-based positional inconsistency or consistency. And then you change those heights, and you start figuring out how your fundamentals change at different heights as your relationship to your rifle with your body changes and what you're doing that might be different. But, you know, depending on how much you shoot, I would certainly do one every couple weeks. If you're competing regularly, I would do one after a match to make sure that things are good. I wouldn't do one before a match because you're not going to be doing a craft drill, most likely, but you're going to be shooting from heights. So you want to make sure that you're adaptable across heights. I think that that is a big difference between people's perception of the rifle craft drill. I see it as an assessment. It's an assessment of adaptability, and it should be across more than just the fixed four heights that you're usually shooting it. You shouldn't be doing it tons because you're at that point training specificity for those heights, and you should be training adaptability, not specificity for those heights. I also don't think that you need to train speed on paper unless you're doing a diagnostic of at what time frame does the stress response start to cause flyers? Does it start to open up my group? So there is the craft stress drill version where you start taking time off or making time hacks that are a little faster to see when does your group open up beyond the expected level? And is that speed something that is realistic for competition? Too fast, too slow? So you can have a grasp on your self-awareness of your inputs as stress and time constraints change. Totally, it's a great diagnostic. But again, I don't think you should be training turbo speeds. I don't think you should be training for that super fast thing and just hoping that your groups get better. But a lot of people shoot tons and tons and tons of rounds, so they know where their average level of performance is. And then somehow they think some kind of Disney miracle is going to happen when they go to a competition. And that just doesn't happen outside of Disney movies, right? What we could use paper for is a diagnostic evaluation tool that can then be used to make a training plan. A lot of that stuff I see as a dry fire, kind of pointing towards dry fire. Dry fire, I usually tell my guys, is everything up to the trigger pull? I don't care if you pull the trigger. I really don't care if somebody dry fires and pulls the trigger. I don't really even care if you run the bolt. Dry fire is so useful for position build and break, position stability, position speed, mechanics, indexing, target acquisition, that those elements, it pays huge dividends to do that, but that also isn't paper. And so I'm not going to talk about those things. I'm going to say that paper really isn't the place for that, except when I do it this fast, when I do this, does my group open up? Do I have a shift that's consistently induced when I have that kind of stress? Because then you say, okay, well, when I'm stressed like this, this is how I typically respond. You'll see that on paper for sure. If you get stressed and kneeling, you start throwing shots left, you can figure out what is it that you do when you're stressed that causes that left shot and take it out. Because you're not going to say, oh, I'm stressed, I'm going to hold a 10th right or 2/10 right because I always throw it to the left. Like, there's just no way you're going to remember that. And also, like, what happens when you do it right? So figuring out what's going on, paper is amazing for. Figuring out the essentials of your mechanics, your relationship to the rifle, your rifle system's capability, the ammo's capability, and then matching that, you know, with your reticle to the expectations of what you want to do, amazing for paper. And it saves time. Ultimately, it saves tons of rounds because you shoot what you need to get the information that you need so that then you could stop, reflect, assess, develop a plan, change the things that need to be changed. And then, you know, then you'll take it to distance. Then you'll take it to dry fire. But distance and dry fire is where a lot of other things happen. Paper is the way you figure out what's happening in the first place. It's unforgiving. It's intimidating. And that's why a lot of people don't do it, because we have this Pavlovian response to ding or seeing the steel move or something like that. And it's amazing. But too often the targets at distance are too big, or they have flashers, or they're painted. All these things that prevent you from growing as a shooter and learning the skill that you need, because it's doing so many of those factors for you. So when I get into steel, I'll be talking about the benefits of steel. And then I think I'm going to do a whole nother week on, you know, indicators and things for improvements, because, you know, flashers are awesome at a competition. Flashers are awesome for, you know, pass, fail, I hit the target or not, but flashers are not good for, you know, is my wind calling getting better, unless you consider the target your standard of wind calling accuracy. And I don't think any shooter who prides themselves on wanting to be the best shooter they possibly can be, or a rifleman or adaptable, is going to consider a target their, you know, highest end of wind calling, because there's so much more that you can achieve from that. And when you look at good shooters, you look at the PRS, you look at F-class, you look at field shooters, like, they can read the wind much better than the size of a plate. And if it has a flasher on it, and that's what you're using as an indicator, your margin of error is the plate, right? And we want to bring our margins of error down more. So that's what I have to say about paper. I think everybody should do it. I think you should do it responsibly, which means know what you're assessing, know what you're measuring. When you see it, map it out, and then don't keep shooting. If you just keep shooting over and over again, you're like, man, I keep making this mistake. That's not really training. And all you're doing is validating that you saw something that you need to figure out how to fix. And it usually doesn't come instantly. And if you can fix it instantly, like, that's awesome. And sometimes we can fix it instantly, and then you validate it, but then doing it over and over again that day isn't going to help much. You need to come back on consecutive days to make sure it doesn't come back. One thing that I kind of tongue-in-cheek say is, you know, a shooter that goes, walks around out to a target at distance and then shoots it 50 times in a row, you know, all of the shots after the first or second, all they're doing is confirming their zero. And it's unnecessary to improve, right? All you're doing after that is checking your zero. And so many shooters go out and they just check their zeros all day, all night, and then think that that's going to translate to competition. And checking your zero, right, is a prerequisite for competition, but it really has nothing to do in terms of preparing you to actually perform. So don't be a zero checker. I guess that's the takeaway. Don't be a zero checker. Be smart. Have a crack.